And hello once again. We are back to recording on Epiphany. This is chapter 8, or we're about ready to do chapter 8. Tried a little bit earlier this evening, but we had a little problem with the battery on the recording device. So this is going to be a take, and we're going to be starting chapter 8 again from the beginning. The story so far: Pastor Dan Stevens of the Magnolia Community Church wakes up one morning to find his church on fire. The church burns to the ground and arson is suspected, at least it appears as arson. Dan is already having problems with his faith, and the fire has been testing his limits. Dan's wife, Emily, her parents, and Tricia Michaels arrange for Dan to visit a friend of his in a cabin in West Virginia. Getting away appears to be good for Dan. He enjoys spending time with his friend and former college roommate, as well as being outdoors, running, and hiking. Dan has a mystery, though. He encounters someone he thinks he's seen, but just can't quite place. This stranger's presence temporarily forgotten on Tuesday morning when he's summoned to be questioned in another church arson. This one, his friend's church in Davis, West Virginia. We start chapter 8 with Emily's Monday morning. Epiphany, chapter 8. Emily wished that she had more sleep when she woke up Monday morning. Several times overnight, Emily reached over to the other side of the bed to hold on to the man who wasn't there. In all of the years they'd been married, the only time he wasn't by her side for at least a portion of any given night were those nights when she was in hospital after having given birth to their children. They were there for each other except, well, very rarely. At 5:30, she finally gave in. Since she couldn't sleep, she thought that she may as well do something useful. Emily threw on an old t-shirt and a pair of gym shorts, along with a pair of anklets and running shoes. She thought of putting her shoes to their intended use, but she'd rather have a partner to run with. She didn't want to run alone. She waited on the front porch for a while, hoping that this was one of those mornings when Chloe Thompson would happen by. After about 10 minutes of wavering, she decided to take a walk instead. Emily walked to South Street, intending to make a loop around the town, perhaps taking the time to have a little talk with Tricia Michaels at Zeke's Cafe. As she neared the intersection of South and Main Streets, she saw Lizzie Elston sitting on the front porch of the Blue and the Gray, dressed in a flimsy nightgown which left little to the imagination. Emily paused momentarily, deciding to join the elderly woman for a minute or two before pressing on. "You're up mighty early," Lizzie commented as Emily came up on the wide veranda. "Missing your husband?" "Yes," Emily replied, "especially after Vera Mace's appearance at services last night." Lizzie took a sip from a glass of iced tea she had next to her on the arm of her chair. "That woman has a screw loose," Emily concluded, shaking her head. Lizzie laughed. "So the preacher's wife knows the truth. Open up, it'll do you some good." A fit of laughter overcame Emily. In seconds, Lizzie Elston was laughing as well. Both women finally recovered long enough for Lizzie to ask Emily if she wanted something to drink. The older woman took Emily's order inside, returning with a second glass of tea, this one with a sprig of mint hanging off the side. "Vera's never been playing with a full deck," Lizzie offered once both women had settled down. "Same could be said about me, too. We all have our idiosyncrasies." "A fair assessment," Emily agreed, "but we all have reasons for our idiosyncrasies. I'm sure that Vera has her reasons." "Now, in a word, yes," Lizzie's smile revealed that she knew more about the absent woman and was about to let Emily in on the secret. "I'm not exactly sure why she feels as she does, but she certainly is committed to making life miserable for you, Daniel, and, for that matter, former Pastor Kello, may he rest in peace. Maybe his support of your nephew and his partner when we arrived here has something to do with it," Emily reminded her. "Her recent ravings have more to do with your use of the school as worship space than it does with my nephew, Lizzie told her guest. She then told Emily the story about the tracts Vera left behind at school several years earlier. "The woman feels cheated, it seems," she concluded. Could she have caused the fire somehow? Was she investigated? Emily asked. All of us were questioned by the police, she was reminded. Everyone with even a remote interest in starting a fire was nowhere near the church when the fire broke out. Well, I think that Vera would like to have seen the community church go up in flames. I doubt that she'd have enough initiative to actually set a fire. That's what Dan said, Emily said. It's good to hear it from another source. Emily took a sip of her tea. You know, you're in for it today, Lizzie remarked. How do you mean? Well, with your husband gone, the people with special needs will be seeking you out to pray for them or to hear a confession, Lizzie pointed out. Maybe I should go back to the house, Emily reasoned. No need to rush. You're not going to get any company until 9 or later. Lizzie shifted positions just a bit so she could look the pastor's wife directly in the eye. And knowing your children and their ages, you have a good 20 minutes before the youngest. Hope, right? Emily nodded to confirm the name of her youngest child. Anyway, the youngest tend to be the earliest risers at this time of year. I didn't think you knew that, Emily stated. I was under the impression that you never had kids of your own. Never did, Lizzie confessed. I thought about it, but by the time we were able to do anything about it, it was too late. My time had passed. You were married? Never married. My parents never approved of the man I loved. We were intimate, but we took precautions. So you're telling me that your parents died after you hit menopause? That's right, Lizzie confirmed. Besides that, only a few people knew about our relationship. If anyone on the school board found out, I'd have been out of a job. Well, surely someone had to know what was going on, Emily surmised. Well, a few board members did know. My lover was even on the board for 3 terms, but everyone looked the other way if they knew. Your lover was one of the men from the missing plaques, I take it, Emily guessed. I'll give you a hint, it wasn't Frosty, she said while a devilish grin came across her face. Now that you know, it's just between us, Emily concluded. The women continued their conversation for another few minutes. Emily eventually excused herself so she could get back to the parsonage. She returned to find that Hope was already up and being fed a bowl of cereal by her big sister. I take it you've been out on business, Grace stated, as a matter of fact, when Emily entered the kitchen. Whatever am I going to do with you? Emily laughed before taking the time to bond with her daughters, an interlude, as it worked out, prior to a long and hectic day. From about 9 onward, there was a steady trickle of petitioners coming to the front door of the Stevens house, each with their own concerns. Some were demanding. Some were sorrowful. Some sought to give Emily and the family some form of comfort in the absence of her husband. At mid-afternoon, Agent Barada came to the house to lend his support and ask a few questions. This time, she was happy to see him. She felt that he'd been on the edge of being rude during his previous visit. I suppose I might have been on edge the last time I was here, Barada explained. I'm not supposed to say anything, but the fire at your church seemed to be a lot like similar fires at other churches, mostly in the East. Since your husband had ties to a few people back there, the people in charge of that investigation are interested to see if there are any similarities. The agent's explanation worried Emily, but not too very much. Her day did go by quickly. Most of the visitors had vanished by the time she needed to start the family dinner. Family time after dinner was mostly peaceful, and the girls were in bed by 9:30. Jacob and Peter managed to wrangle an invitation for a sleepover with Kevin Peel, one involving a snipe hunt arranged by Kevin's older stepbrother. After everything had settled down, Emily went out on the front porch to enjoy the warm night air. While Frank settled down next to her, Emily punched a pair of buttons on her cell phone. One of them woke the device, the other put her in touch with the love of her life. After a couple of soft purrs from the other end, the familiar voice eased its way through the ether, triggering a smile on her face. I was hoping that you'd call, Dan Stevens told his wife. I'd have called myself, but you know how I am with the phone. And I missed you too, she said. How was your day? Oh, you know, the usual, lurching from crisis to crisis with no end in sight, she sighed. His warm chuckle at her response meant the world to her. She knew that he knew what kind of day she'd had. He often complained about his travails on Mondays. "I suppose your day was pleasant and stress-free," Emily added. "Actually, it was," Dan confided. "To tell you the truth, I feel majorly guilty about being here without you. Maybe you can leave the kids to your parents and come join me." The idea sounded delicious to her. Since moving to Magnolia, they hadn't really had any real quality time together, just the two of them. "Let me run it past Dad," she told him. "Actually, he suggested that we might want to consider doing just that when we planned the trip." "Great minds run on the same channel," he quipped. "Idiots think alike," she shot back. A moment or two of light laughter later, Dan continued on a more serious note. "When you come, maybe you can clear up a mystery for me." He filled her in on the sightings of the mystery man earlier in the day. "I know I've seen him somewhere," he told her. "For some reason, I have this urgent feeling that I need to know who this person is and how he fits into, I don't know, recent events." "How do you mean?" she asked. "He might fit into the fire. I know it seems crazy, but somehow I get the feeling that he's somehow responsible or knows something about who might be." She waited to hear more from the man she loved. "I'll make arrangements to come over on Thursday," she stated, breaking the short silence. "In the meantime, put whatever ills you have out of your mind. I love you." "I love you, too. Kisses to you, the kids, and let everyone know that I'm looking forward to coming back." "I can't wait," she said. They both made kissing noises into the phone before hanging up. Emily went inside to put the phone on the bedside table to allow it to charge. She said a silent prayer, then turned off the light, hoping for sleep to take her into its arms and protect her from the day ahead. If it was anything like the day she'd just completed, she wasn't sure whether or not she wanted it to come. That's chapter 8, and we're right at about 12 minutes, and that's probably a good time to quit before we go into chapter 9. That would be next week. We're going back into Tuesday morning with just after the fire, and we're going to have Dan going out to the fire location with an agent of the FBI. We'll be finding out some more about him. Quick note: I mentioned Agent Barada in there. Back in Ohio, one of the FBI agents was Agent Barada. He was a good friend of the family, and this is a salute to him, left-handed, I suppose. People who from Chillicothe who might be listening to this probably know exactly who I'm talking about. Anyway, in the meantime, it's been a lot of fun. Don't take any Nicholson. We'll see you out there. Be seeing you.